This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to another episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. We are on the road and have just finished speaking at the homeschooling conference in Peoria, Illinois. And that was hosted by the Association of Peoria Area Christian Home Educators,
otherwise known as APACHE. We spoke there, but also our son, John Calvin Young, spoke. And he spoke about being a Christian on a secular university campus. We thought it was so great, we wanted to share it with you. So tonight, you'll be hearing part one of Christ and College by John Calvin Young.
Short word of introduction. I'm a college grad and a Christian. I went to one of the top three party schools in the nation, one of the top 15 secular schools, and also to one of the most selective schools in the world when I was studying abroad at Oxford University. And I tell you, as a word of hope, that I came through all that, and you can too. I graduated from a top-flight secular school with no debt, but more importantly, no regrets. I think my faith is stronger now than it was when I went off to school. I sustained some wounds, everyone does, but it's entirely possible to survive and even to thrive in that secular, impermissive environment. So, let's just get going here. This is the thing that a lot of us are thinking. You know, young people looking forward to college, parents looking at sending their kids off. So many young people leave the church. How can you stand firm through college? What do you need to know? What are you going to face? And how can you prepare? Something important to realize is that famous Greek philosopher said that you can never step into the same river twice. That as time goes on, it's not the same river, even if it's in the same place. Well, college is very much the same way. And so the way things were 10, 20, 30 years ago are not necessarily indicative of what the college environment is like today. And there's definitely some particular challenges now. For the purposes of this session, we're just going to talk about, you know, your past decision. You're going to go to college somewhere. What do you need to know about this experience before you go? What do you need to do to get yourself ready for the challenges? Where are the challenges going to come from? And so, first principles, I tell people it's a battleground. This is not your home. You know, it says we're sojourners in a foreign land here. Well, that feels particularly pronounced when you're in the university environment. The important application of that is, first, it doesn't matter how good a home you came from or how sheltered you were leading up to it, you are going to run into temptations and you are going to have to fight. There's no way to seal yourself off from the world enough that you're never going to have to fight. And also that those temptations and trials you're facing are not necessarily going to come the direction you expect. You know, a lot of us, young Christian homeschool folk, come through high school, do debate and apologetics and everything else and think, okay, the big challenge is going to be that professor that's out for Christianity's blood. Well, it may not be. There may be other things that are much more of an issue in your particular experience in your environment. So we're going to talk about some of those. The second thing, and this is hope and challenge in the same sentence. College is a bubble of alternate reality. And that is to say that it is not reality, but it is real. That you can't deny what's going on when you're there. I mean, there are real consequences and real sins and real victory. But you also, you're not living in it forever. There's a certain aspect which you say, grit your teeth, get through this, make it through the next few years. You know, you're not living in this sort of environment for the rest of your career. The thing I tell people is that when I went to college, I majored in politics. I was always kind of thinking a couple decades in advance. I said, okay, my goal is to get through this experience with my degree and everything, you know, what I came here for. But I really want to get through without anything that I can't tell my parents, my wife someday, my pastor, my CPA, my lawyer, or my campaign manager. Figured that covered all the bases. Didn't want any skeletons in the closet walking out of college. And I can say, praise the Lord, that's where I stand today. First thing, and this is something we've all talked about, but there's some things you may not know. choosing a college is a very big deal. And the answer is not obvious. So to start with, a Christian school is very likely to be a friendlier environment. In most Christian schools, we'll have no hostile professors. You're not going to get that sort of challenge in the classroom. Honestly, a con is that it may be harder to live as a Christian where it's simply presumed. It's really easy to stagnate in that sort of environment and just, well, you know, everybody's a Christian here. I don't have to live it out. I'm not going to be challenged. It just becomes rote. Additionally, and this is something worth thinking about for its impact, is that most Christian schools, regrettably, have much smaller endowments and have very limited financial resources. If finances constrains at all where you might be going, you may need to be looking in the secular side of things, too. Secular school, typically, on average, is going to have a higher profile reputation than most Christian schools. Very significantly, it may have better scholarships available. It was miles cheaper for me to go to a really top-flight liberal arts college than to any of the Christian schools I looked at, and even to the state school down the road, an hour away. It would have cost me several thousand dollars a year more than going to a much more expensive school. I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. A secular school, to help balance out some degree what's going on there, is more likely actually to have strong campus Christian organizations. Places with other students gathering together, you know, circling the wagons and really living out their faith on campus. It's pretty much a given. It's going to have a more adverse peer group. The campus culture is going to be sicker. And that's just a fact of life, unfortunately. But really, despite the possibility of extremely biased professors and indoctrination courses and that sort of thing, not to be sneezed at, there's definitely some of those out there, it may be easier to live a Christian life on that secular campus where you're being challenged every day and you know the eyes are on you and you know that it comes down to you to live out your faith than it is where it's just assumed, just part of life. Stepping past that again, let's say you've decided to go to a secular school like I did. There are challenges you're going to walk into day one, hour one, minute one, walking on campus at orientation. You need to prepare for just real deep, intense culture shock that the absolute trendiest homeschooler I've ever met would be shocked at what goes on in the average secular environment of a high school, an average college. That first week is quite often outright propaganda and brainwashing. Desire to get you all off on the same foot, thinking the same way, doing the same things. Here's the ground rules, you know, don't set fire to your dorm, don't do this, and don't judge people who are homosexual, and it's okay if you're sleeping over someone else's room. Yeah, no. It's really, really rough walking into that first day. But here's the thing. Orientation's a week or 2 weeks. Grit your teeth, get through it, give noncommittal answers to the tough questions, just survive. Everything changes, again, at the end of the week. So as part of that, you do need to prepare yourself for seeing the culture around you, recognizing and accepting some truly heinous things. And this is a key principle of living in this sort of intensely secular environment. Be prepared to stand. And that you choose that word carefully because it implies neither running towards something nor running away. That there's only so far you can run. You can't just get away from the world and be outside of the world entirely and never have to touch it again. To a certain extent, you're going to have to be in it, but you also don't need to be drawn into it. Yeah, so you need to be able to understand that there's something going on here that I do not approve of, cannot approve of, but I can still speak to the publicans and tax collectors. You know, Jesus had to deal with these same sort of things. You know, I had a couple of Christian friends that tried the other route that literally would not speak to anyone they didn't fully approve of. This was not particularly good for their interaction with anyone on the planet or their witness either on campus. That said, I had some other Christian friends who got on campus and got into the wrong group and soon was making excuses for them and then starting to participate in things and really, in the end, lived just like everybody else did. These are both paths you don't need to be going down, so be prepared to stand your place. Don't fall for it. Don't run away. You know, run away from you committing sin. You know, but don't, you don't have to shut the world out entirely. you're going to have to meet it on a certain ground there. And those issues, those things you're going to need to deal with, they may be bigger or lesser deals depending on where you're from, you know, your background. But the things I notice people really having a hard time coming to grips with, you know, open alcohol use, you know, smoking, drug use, homosexuality, fornication, these sort of things. As I said, you don't need to agree with it. You don't need to approve of it. In fact, I would be horrified if you did. But you need just be aware that it's going to crop up and it's probably going to be down the hall. I mean, that's how close it gets. That leads me to the next point, housing. This is not always an option. It depends definitely on where you go. But if at all possible, for your first year when you know nobody on campus, get a single room. It does cost sometimes a fair fraction more. It is worth every penny. Because, I said, it's just down the hall. If you get the wrong roommate, it's in your room. You know, whatever you're talking about there, you know. My brothers, some of them weren't in the position to get a single room their first year. The colleges didn't offer it. And they had issues with all sorts of just misery. I mean, lots of it just simple interpersonal stuff like, you know, I want to sleep in pitch darkness with rock music blaring, you know, sort of thing. It's like, that's just hard to live with. But other things were, you know, on a very different level, such as the girlfriend that lives there, you know, that sort of thing. That's the bad roommate can make your life really, really miserable. Now, again, depending on the university, you may have the option offered of living off campus as early as your first year. You know, driving from home or getting an apartment near campus or something, so, you know, not living in the university provided dorms. Weigh very carefully the ups and downs of doing that. You know, if you're in a situation where you know that the dorms are going to be really rough, that might be your road to sanity and safety. That said, on even aside from the cost, which again, it's usually going to cost a significant amount to do that, it's not the default option. Living in high traffic versus low traffic areas, you know, which can be as simple as I'm on a hall with 60 other kids versus I'm living a quarter mile off campus, can make a real impact on, you know, honestly, it can make the difference between a full social life and a situation where you really have to go out of your way to meet people and go out of your way to do anything or be invited to anything. So that's something just to weigh, just to be thinking about, you know. I had a good friend, another Christian conservative friend in college who, like me, had real issues with a lot of the things going on around. Well, whenever her family came to town or she had friends in the area or anything else, she would leave campus for the weekend and just go. And that's a great thing to a certain point. I'll talk some more about that down the line. But it got to a point for 1 year, I remember, where it's like you didn't really expect her to ever be around. That if we were out of class and it wasn't, you know, class the next morning, she wasn't going to be on campus, so you just didn't bother inviting her, you know. And so that's something to weigh is you want to balance the very real and critical need to get out of the bubble and out of this world for a time and not spending every single minute away from campus. You know, there's a certain aspect of social life, which is, you know, being around and being available and meeting people. That leads to the big part, the big elephant that a lot of us talk about. And that is, what's it going to be like to be a Christian in the classroom?
Well, we'd like to welcome a new sponsor this week.
Who is it, Hal?
This is SchoolhouseTeachers.com.
Oh, yay. You know what? I love Schoolhouse Teachers. We're mm-hmm. members, mm-hmm. and they have over 200 classes that you just get as part of your membership. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it's expensive. You know, it's $1 for the first month and $12.95 after that.
Yeah, and each individual child, there's no extra charge for it. You can add kids to it. You can have more kids. You can do more classes.
And you know what? I've been thinking, we have paid hundreds of dollars for one course online in the past. And here I can get any of 200 plus classes mm-hmm. for all of my kids. And they've got stuff that's preschool through high school.
Yeah, I was looking at high school economics a little while ago.
And I was looking at an art class for a child who's gifted in art. And it's all included. Plus, I saw they had over 10,000 videos too. It's cool, Hal.
That sounds like a deal. Okay, your first month is $1, $12.95 after that. SchoolhouseTeachers.com.
That leads to the big part, the big elephant that a lot of us talk about. And that is, what's it going to be like to be a Christian in the classroom? You know, what are you going to have to deal with from professors? You know, what about the classes? You know, you're going to end up in a situation that you really, you know, are going to be pulling the mat to defend your faith in front of your peers. And the answer is maybe. But something which I did not expect was that that was really not where the major challenges came from. That, at least in my environment, most professors were very professional. Most classes, now admittedly, I did place out of a lot of the freshman level science courses, and I took some philosophy courses. I did not take any religion courses or psychology or some of the other ones that are liable to be very thorny, shall we say. But I did not run into many professors who are going to just give me the full court press. I can say, as far as just living in those classes day to day, be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. You know, Proverbs has some other good things to say and says, you know, the wise man sees danger and hides himself, but the fool goes on and is punished. You know, pick and choose your classes. You know, not every fight is one. You know, I'm not likely to go volunteer for a course, you know, that it's structured around, you know, taking down Christianity, you know, or something, which some of those courses exist. That's just not a useful use of my time, usually. In a course, you know, we'll assume your courses are going to be a mix of content. You know, if you're in a course where a professor does want to take a combative stance, or one of the other students does, you know, and they're challenging you, and they're wanting to really face up against Christianity and discredit, well, choose your battles. Not every single thing is a hill to die on. You know, I was a very combative, very competitive high schooler. I had done years of debate and everything. I was raring to go. I just wanted to fight. Not every argument was really the best time to be doing that. There are things you can just say, well, you know, this is not a good discussion venue. This is not something I'm going to discuss right now, and just let it go past. But a real challenge, be ready to pick that up. The thing is, you don't want a reputation as a poorly argued fringe opinion. So you don't want to be the one who's standing up and disagreeing with the professor, or disagreeing with another student's argument with the equivalent of, no, it's not that way because I don't feel it like that. That's not a very good argument, and that doesn't do anything to enhance your witness or your credibility. I did have an interesting situation in my first few weeks of university. I had registered for a political philosophy course with supposedly the hardest professor in the department. I got in the first day, and it sure sounded like it. He just launched right in. I think he played a recording even before he spoke to everybody. It was like 15 minutes of really intense stuff. And then he turned that off and just starts firing rapid-fire questions at people. Yeah, that's the sort of professor it was. And honestly, it was fantastic. I love that guy. He ended up my advisor later. But I recall somewhere in that first day or two in class, he really just put up the thesis that there are situations in life that there is no moral way out of. They're just a catch-22, and there's no way to be a moral decision-maker in this. And that's just, he didn't go quite as far as saying morality was totally false in his opinion, but he definitely posed this question. I'm not even entirely sure whether he believed it or not, but, you know, he was very fond of Socratic method and playing the devil's advocate. I just thought about this. I thought, okay, I can't let this one go by. So I raised my hand and disagreed and gave him an argument why not. And he just kind of swiveled and launched back with a rebuttal. I answered it, gave me another. I'm just sitting there just kind of sweating blood thinking, this is my GPA going down the toilet, you know. I was just like, okay, I'm 3 days in, you know, I'm just going to fail out now. He is totally going to fail me. And after about 6 or 8 minutes, thank you, Ms. Jung. He made some good points and went on with the class. It was fine. I ended up getting an A in that course. He was okay with someone disagreeing with him. And he could respect someone who could come up with a legitimate argument and debate him as equals. You know, and at a certain point, it was time for the class to go on, but he was fair enough and honest enough, he wasn't going to fail me just because I disagreed with him. In fact, from what he said later, I think he actually respected it. I came to really enjoy my time with that professor, even though we disagreed on so many things. But we could respect the honesty in each other's intellectual pursuits. And that's the way an awful lot of professors are going to be. So do that. Be a good student and be prepared. As I said, again, you don't want to be the student who disagrees with the professor and also doesn't bother to do any of the readings ever. You know, you don't want to be the student who's failing out and disagreeing with everything in the course. Do the other thing so they'll take you seriously when you do need to disagree. With the professors, I can say, do get to know your professors as much as possible. To a certain extent, when you have the opportunity, before you take their course, there is a very good site out there called ratemyprofessor.com. And it's all user-entered reviews. So you can't take it as gospel that if, you know, five people really hate this professor, he must be a toad. In fact, the best professors usually had a large number of people who really loved them and a large number of people who absolutely hated them. Those were usually the best, honestly. But you can read through, you can see what they're talking about. You know, is this a professor who, you know, sometimes people got really good ratings because they didn't bother to teach anything. And they just figured that kids would read the textbook and do an easy test and they'd be done. And you're like, why am I going to college for this? You know, I don't need a professor that's good like that. You know, another time you can see someone who might have a lot of negative reviews, like a few of my favorite professors. But you read them, you see, okay, this is someone who wants students to think, who's grading people down when they won't think and won't read the materials. But, and, you know, I recall one review of a professor, someone said, he's incredibly difficult. I worked the hardest I've ever worked. I got a C. But you know what? That C was worth it. So, okay. Maybe I don't take that the same term that I take everything else as difficult, but you know what? That might be experience. You know, if he's a professor that's really like that. So you get hints. You know, and you can talk around campus. You can ask people about various departments. Who's the good person to take stats from? Who's the good person to go to in the philosophy department or religion or something else? You know, these are useful things to know. You know, you just have to take it all with a grain of salt. And then something an old teacher of mine told me, said, you ever want your professor or your teacher or the speaker to notice you? He said, come sit in the front row. I said, what? You know, it seems kind of natural to slip in the back and get comfortable. I said, no, sit in the front row. He said, because nobody does it. So if you sit in the front row, they notice. You want them to answer your questions, sit in the front row. I said, oh, okay. So I started trying it. He was right. It's a lot of fun. I would go, I'd get a seat in the front row or second row or something in a lot of halls. And you know what? That's where the professor is looking. That's who they're checking their reaction. You know, if you're sitting in row 17Z back there, honestly, he's probably not even going to see your hand, you know, if you have a question. But you're sitting there in row 2 and he's been checking you every 30 seconds the whole time just to see how you're listening. Yeah, you know what? It's hard to get away with things. Yeah. But at the same time, they're going to recognize that you were in their class. They're going to notice, you know, that you were sitting there paying attention. You're nodding, you know, when he makes a good point, you're making a connection with that professor, and they're going to come respect that. Another thing, I don't have it on the slides here, is get to know not just the professor, but also your department head and the dean. They are the authorities in the chain above you, and they can help you have a world of trouble. A department head can, in certain circumstances, overrule a professor. A department head can also usually approve on bringing in credit from something else, from a non-class experience or classes took elsewhere. A provost or a dean can address issues between departments. You know, I once had a situation where one class had a weekly test that invariably took everyone 2 hours when it really was only a 1 hour class. It was running into my math class afterwards. And the math teacher was getting mad at me. I asked, I don't know what to do. So I went to the dean. And the dean listened to my case, went and dealt with the professors, and then came back and said, okay, compromise. You can go to math class and come back and finish your test. I said, okay. Yeah, I just needed a solution. And they made that solution happen. So knowing who to go to, it can be really useful there.
Well, you've been listening to the first half of John Calvin Young's session at the recent Apache conference called Christ in College. And John's got the experience to talk about this. You know, as he said, he has been a successful student on two quite secular campuses, and I think really grew in his faith through the process.
He walked with Christ and he made a difference for the Lord there. You know, if you'd like to hear the rest of this message and you don't want to wait until next week, you can download it at our website at raisingrealmen.com. And just click on the store. We also have some other great resources for people who are at this stage of life. Pre-Flight is our online class series for teens and their parents to prepare them for the transition to adulthood. And we have two add-on sessions to Pre-Flight that'll prepare you for the transition to college.
Right. So if you're interested in that, come out to raisingrealmen.com/preflight. And that'll give you all the information you need on that.
Thank you for joining us tonight on Making Biblical Family Life Practical. We'll see you next week. I'm Melanie.
And I'm Hal.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.